Tonight the subject is work, and we got it with it. Dawson Trotman told me that you can tell by the way a person walks on the job how much they're going to work they're going to get done. So let's get with it here. And there'll be no tears, blubbering, crying tonight. I don't have time between now and the time I get finished. And it's not the subject for it anyway. And besides, I want to tell you, and I don't want anybody to sympathize with me, I hate it like 60 when I blubber or kind of so on. Feeling, yes, but choking up, no. It's embarrassing to some. And it's genetic. I get it from my mother. It's lack of self-control. Don't tell me otherwise. Because Paul says, teach the older men to be temperate, dignified, and self-controlled. And I'm working on all three. So don't sympathize. Just pray for me, okay? Now to the great subject of work. But we'll start with Psalm 128:1 that we just went over. Let's say it together. Read it together up here, okay? And are you ready? Blessed. Good. Then yesterday morning we talked about verses 3 and 4. Your wife should be like a fruitful vine in the very heart of your house. Yeah, I love it. Your children like olive plants all around your table. Behold, thus shall a man be blessed who fears the Lord. We talked about our personal deep relationship with God. We talked about the family. And tonight it's about work. Verse 2. When you eat the labor of your hands, you shall be happy, and it shall be well with you. And I brought my plaque back again tonight. You can't read it, but I thought it's the theme for my talk. First two lines. Blessed is the man to whom his work is a pleasure. I thought, aha, that's what it's talking about here. Blessed is the person to whom their work is a pleasure. Now we get the idea that work is a result of the fall. Work was given us before the fall. And what he's saying here is, if you walk, fear the Lord, walk in his ways, your work will be a pleasure. A pleasure. And that is what we're going to be talking about tonight. And whether or not work is a pleasure or a pain depends largely on our attitude, doesn't it? And our attitude is a choice. Because attitudes are habits of thought, and they started with choices. We've all heard about Viktor Frankl, who was a prisoner of the Nazis, and to all the confinement, the indignities, and all that he went through. And he concluded that the ultimate freedom that a person has is the freedom to choose their attitude. Remember? That's one thing they can't take away from you. They cannot take away the freedom you have to choose how you respond to what happens to you. That's the ultimate freedom. Well, we have the freedom to choose the attitude toward whatever work we have to do. We can choose that. And that choice can determine whether or not it results in pleasure or pain. Now, I have to own up to something. For years, something that I just kind of resented was the Saturday honeydew list. I felt, for instance, particularly in my younger days, I felt that I was more important than I was to the navigators, etc. And I thought, why should I do a $3-an-hour work job? I'm a $20-an-hour man. Why should I do a $3-an-hour person job? And that just doesn't make sense. And then also, it kind of troubled me a little bit. Occasionally, I get this little remark. It's kind of nice seeing you working around the house. And there was that tension for some years. And finally, one day, something dawned on me. I thought, I see what's happening. So I talked to Lucy. I said, you know, I see what I've done. In letting you know, my attitude is saying, what I'm doing is far more important than what you're doing. And that your life and your interests and what's here, and that we're married here, and it's ours together, but what I do is more important than what you're interested in. And old tear began to come down her cheek, and we wasn't able to express it, but that was true. My attitude was wrong. And I have had a significant change in my attitude, and I think I can say tonight that it's more pleasure and less pain. And I chose those very carefully. And there are certain things I can do, and I can do very well. I can mop the kitchen floors, I can vacuum, I can keep the yard, particularly if I have help, the nicest lawn in the valley, etc. But please don't ask me to find out what's wrong with the dryer. Please, not that. But you know, it's true, your attitude makes a big difference. And a lot of times we think when our job or our work, whatever it is, I can only get out of here and get out to Hawaii and get about 3 or 4 weeks off and get out from under this, whereas a change of attitude will do you more good than a month in Hawaii. Because the trouble is you take the attitude with you and you bring it back. And it's a choice. And it's really true that you can be about as happy as you choose to be. So, this has to do with blessed is the person who, to whom his work is a pleasure. It has to do with choice, with our attitudes. Well, and whether it's a pleasure or our pain bears with our choices concerning our first verse. Now, the fear of the Lord is a choice. Proverbs, and I don't think I got to that. I checked my notes over. Can't remember what I said. How long ago that was? 2 weeks ago when we first started here. Proverbs 1:29, it says, because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord is a choice. You can decide to do it or not do it. Proverbs 1:29. And listen to the context of this. Then they will call on me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but will not find me. Because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They aren't going to get their prayers answered. They're not going to find me. They didn't make the choice. They would have none of my counsel and despised all my reproof. Therefore, they shall eat the fruit of their own way. And it'll become ashes in their hands. They'll have a dark brown taste. And they'll be filled with full with their own fancies. For, listen, the turning away of the simple will slay them. And the complacency of fools will destroy them. You know, I think sometimes we forget the contrast in the Bible. The broad road leads to destruction, not just inconvenience. The other one leads to life, not just a little better, but life with fizz in it, with a sparkle to it. And so here it is, the choice, and we make that choice. So, but then the last verse, he says, but whoever listens to me, chooses the fear of the Lord, will dwell safely and will be secure without fear of evil. Fear of the Lord drives out other wrong fears. Godly fears drives out ungodly fears. And not only that, then when you eat the fruit of the labor of your hands, you'll be happy and it'll be well with you. Isn't that terrific?
Yeah,
it's a choice. But also the second part is a choice, is it not? Whether or not to walk in his ways is a choice. We can decide yes or no. And God has given us that freedom and he respects it. Psalm 119:173. Let me read it to you. Anybody here ever memorized the 119th Psalm? I've been looking for 20 years, found nobody yet. If I do, I won't take time to listen to them even. It's got 176 verses. Psalm 119:173. Listen to this. In this great, let your hand, he's praying now, let your hand become my help, for I have chosen your precepts. In other words, Now, walking in His ways is a choice. If I choose not to, I'm on my own. But if I choose to walk in His ways, I have His help. Christian life is not a do-it-yourself proposition. I have His help. So, when you eat the labor of your hands, if you do verse 1, then verse 2 will be true. When you eat the labor of your hands, you shall be happy, and shall be well with you, and your work will be a pleasure. Okay, now what are His ways concerning work? Well, yeah, books on work. And it's kind of like the more I read, the more confused I got. So I just decided to take one main text tonight. Got to keep it simple. And I'd like you to turn with me to Deuteronomy chapter 5. Deuteronomy chapter 5, where we have the second occasion of the giving of the Ten Commandments. The first time they were given was in Exodus 20, where Moses delivered the Ten Commandments to the first generation. 40 years passed, they all died off. The next generation that came up that was going to go into the Promised Land, he repeated them. And that's what we have in Deuteronomy 5. And the fourth commandment, beginning with verse 12. Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath for the Lord your God. It's to be different. Now, just a word about the Ten Commandments. Now, the Ten Commandments were not some rules that God thought up. They are the reflection or the expression of the character of God. They're just written into the constitution of things. They're written into the constitution of every human being, Christian or not. And if somebody has rightly said, you don't break the Ten Commandments, they break you. You break them, you get hurt. Now, they are a divine standard. But I want to stop and say, I know of the theological things that go through people's mind. Let me say this. I believe that salvation is by grace through faith alone. And it's that way from the beginning to the middle to the end. Four words sum up the essence of the Christian life. It's by grace through faith. You're not saved by keeping the Ten Commandments or anything else. It's by grace through faith. But I also believe in hard work. And 1 Corinthians 15:10, Paul says, but by the grace of God, I am what I am. And that's what we believe. That is, by the undeserved help from God. That's what grace is. He helps us. He just doesn't only smile on us. He helps us. The undeserved grace of God. By the grace of God, I am what I am. And His grace toward me was not in vain, but I worked harder than they all. Yet not I, but the grace of God that was with me. So hard work and grace are not antithetical. And so grace and the fourth commandment are not mutually exclusive. Okay? And so, I hope that takes care of that part. But as you'll see here, as we move along, I think that we have here something very fundamentally helpful. And I hadn't really studied this one before just like this. And I've had a great joy, and let me share some of the thoughts. He says here, you know, we spend a lot of time on the fourth commandment about the Sabbath. And I'm going to talk about that toward the end. I've struggled for years. Are we supposed to? Are we not? How are you supposed to do it? How not do it? And all the things. And we know that Jesus about got killed over that subject many times. They just got absolutely irate over this matter of the Sabbath. They are far more concerned whether or not he kept the Sabbath than whether somebody got healed. So it can be a pretty emotional subject. But it says, 6 days shalt thou labor. I want to talk about the 6 days. That's also in there. 6 days shalt thou labor and do, you shall labor and do all your work. Now, 6 days. I have sometimes said that I would like to be a Christian living in a Muslim village in Israel. Now, the Muslims take Friday off, the Jews take Saturday off, and the Christians take Sunday off. So they would give me a 3-day weekend every week. And the only problem with that is it says, 6 days shalt thou labor. And then the seventh, whenever that seventh turns out to be. So there went my 3-day week. And I decided not to move there. As if it had really seriously crossed my mind. Now, I remember one time John Stott said to me, do you think, Lorne, do you think a 5-day work week is scriptural? And I thought about that, and I thought, well, the answer to that is this, that there's a difference between work and employment. Now, employment should be work. It isn't always. I read about an applicant who said, and the interviewer said to this applicant for the job, would you like to work here? He said, not necessarily, but I would like a job. And another applicant said, you said this job pays $5 an hour. The interviewer said, yes. And the applicant said, I think I ought to get $10 an hour. And the interviewer said, why is that? He said, well, I don't know anything about it, therefore I'll have to work harder. Oh, well, you got to try a few of those in there, you know, every little bit. But employment and work are not the same. Now, I assume that employment ought to be work. But there's a lot more work being done than just having a job or an employment, right? Just ask some wives about this. I remember being in an Eastern Europe country. One of our Christian friends there said, you capitalists, you work on the job and then rest when you get home. We rest on the job and work when we get home. Well, I don't know. You look around, you may wonder if that's, we haven't captured some of their habits over here. But and I think of that little poem. I don't think I have the poem right. Man's work is done at the setting of the sun, but woman's work is never done. Well, whatever you will say, work is more than employment. It doesn't say 6 days shalt thou be employed. It says 6 days shalt thou labor. And this word labor, which I'm coming to next, has to do with work. All kinds of work. 6 days. And so let's look at the word labor. Now, I looked that up. And really, with our sort of the way I would use the word, I changed the words. 6 days shall you work and do all your labor. Because the word labor means work in any sense, all kinds of work. And work, and I've got part of a definition here. Work is an expenditure of mental or physical energy resulting in a product or a service. It might be a coat or a clean carpet. There's a product and a service. It's the expenditure of mental or physical energy resulting in a product or a service. Now, result. I said a result. Why? Because verse 2 in our psalm here says, when you eat the, in the margin says, the fruit of the labor, the result of your work, you shall be happy, and it should be well with you. There is down the end here, it says, there should be some pleasure in it. There should be something to enjoy. And that's our theme. Whose work is a pleasure. Now, I'm just thinking, we're going to have to do something. These bifocals of mine, if you wear bifocals, these notes are right where the top and the bottom are fighting each other. So I can't quite go like this or like this. And besides, I can hardly read my own writing when it's about 2 minutes old. When I was traveling, my kids used to say, Dad, while you're gone, if you be sure to do two things, pray and print. Well, now I can't even print, it seems like. I can't read. It must have been a great idea, but I can't think of what I was going to say there. Well, next time around, okay? Well, it said that labor is all kinds of work. Now, for all kinds of work, there's a beautiful illustration about somebody who did all kinds of work. So turn with me, please, to the last chapter of the book of Proverbs. And some of you are saying, okay, I know what you're after here. That's right, a wise woman. Now, this will prove to you that a woman's work is never done. We're going to read about all the kinds of work that this woman did. Proverbs 31, beginning with verse 10. Who can find a virtuous wife? Well, her worth is far above rubies. I don't know how valuable they are, but they better be valuable, because a wife is a valuable thing. The heart of her husband safely trusts her, so he will have no lack of gain. As I read that, I wonder if she had gone to a Ron Blue seminar, made notes of everything, and was handling the money well invested, and he didn't have to worry about that part. She could be a financial manager. Maybe better than Bob Clemens is. I don't know, but she was a good one. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She sells wool and flax. So that sounds to me like she's in the wholesale business there. And willingly works with her hands. Not quite sure there, but she works. She's like the merchant ship. She brings her food from afar. I guess she gets around the market and gathers up the food and with the shopping list and all the rest. She also rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and a portion for her maidservants. She looks after the help. She's quite a serving woman. And she's also in the real estate business. She considers a field and buys it, and from her profits she plants a vineyard. So, yeah, I like that kind of an idea. Wow. She girds herself with strength and strengthens her arms. She visits a health club 3 times a week. Maybe even has time for aerobics. I don't know. She perceives that her merchandise is good and her lamp does not go out by night. She stretches out her hands to the distaff and her hand holds the spindle. She can make cloth. She's a manufacturer. She extends her hand to the poor. Yes, she reaches out her hands to the needy. She's a social worker. She's not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household is clothed with scarlet. I've heard about red underwear, but I've never seen it. The red long handles, you know, they're always white where I came from. She makes tapestry for herself. Her clothing is fine, linen and purple. I think that when she walked into the room, you'd kind of go, you know, just take a second look. Hey, a pretty sharp-looking lady. Her husband is known on the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. He's either on the city council or in Congress, I don't know which, but there he is. And meanwhile, she makes linen garments and sells them. She's got a dress shop. And then a wholesale business. She supplies sashes for the merchants. Strength and honor are her clothing. She shall rejoice in time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and on her tongue is a law of kindness. She does a little counseling on the side. I'm telling you, talk about all kinds of work and quite a woman, huh? Superwoman. We're going to talk about her in a minute here. She watches over the ways of her household. She does not eat the bread of idleness. And that's kind of an understatement there, isn't it? When would she have time to sit around? Boy. Her children rise up and call her blessed. I don't blame them. And Her husband also, and he praises her, and he very well better. You bet. You better reinforce that kind of a situation. Many daughters have done well, he said, but you excel them all. And I'd say, well, he's right. Work. Just all kinds of work. That's what the word labor means. Just work of all kinds. Everything she does there, it's work. Whether you get paid for it or not, whether it's 8 to 5 or not, whether it's called employment or job or not, it all qualifies as work. By the way, how do you think she managed all that? Superwoman. I read somewhere that they think this is just a composite of about 20 women. May well be. You ever heard Paul Harvey's, one of his programs called The Rest of the Story? Let's read the rest of the story. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. There it is. What gave her wholeness to life? What integrates it all together? What sort of guides her and leads her to what to do next? She lives with this profound awareness of God. There's a guiding hand in her life. Yeah, that makes a difference. Profound difference, doesn't it? Well, now we know the rest of the story. Yeah. So that's work, all kinds of work. Now for some of us, you wonder if spiritual work or spiritual things like, what does your daddy do? Does he work? No, he's in religious activities. John Stott tells how he was on a train, and in one of those British trains in the compartment, and in the train was a communist who asked him what he was doing. He said he was a clergy, and he said to him, it's about time you become productive. You're a parasite on society. Clergy are not, they don't do work. In fact, John said, there's sort of a common saying over there that the clergy are invisible 6 days of the week, and on the seventh, they're incomprehensible. Is spiritual work work? Well, Bible studies work, because 2 Timothy 2:15 says so. And I don't know where it says it, but I know prayer is work. Is witnessing work? John 4, Jesus said it was work. Is redeeming people work? Jesus said, my Father worketh hitherto, and I'm working. We're both working. All kinds of work. That's what we're talking about. 6 days shall you do all kinds of work. Now, how shall we work? How shall we do it? Well, once in a while, it's only been 3 or 4 times, I've given a little talk at a Kiwanis Club or somewhere on the Bible and your business. And I'm not going to give the talk, but I'm going to give the 3 main points. And the first principle is hard work. And I sometimes use this little Living Proverbs. And over in Proverbs 13:4, in the Living, it says, "Well, wealth from gambling quickly disappears. Wealth from hard work grows." Hey, that's a better one than I thought, because that happened to fit, and it's the wrong reference. Boy, when you get on a roll, everything's going for you. I'm telling you. Yeah, isn't that something? It says over here, a lazy man are soon poor. Hard workers get rich. Well, I tell them some years ago, in fact, when I was just young, I hear my dad say about certain businessmen that their business failed. And later in life, you know, somebody say, well, so-and-so's business went belly up, the term. Some of you were talking the other day, where'd that term come from? Well, a fish, when it dies, it goes belly up. So when a business dies, it goes belly up. And say, well, why did it die? What happened? Well, it didn't follow good basic business principles. So I'd ask, well, what are some of those principles? You know, I like to write those down. And I can never get any. So finally, one day, I decided to look through the book of Proverbs and study and find out every business principle that I could there that would relate to any kind of business. Farming, cobbler, grocery store. I found 14 of them. But you know, there's one that appeared more than the other 13 all put together. And what was it? Hard work. Well, you know, businessmen go for that, of course. And that's true. Thomas Edison said, in the matter of invention, inspiration is about 1%, and it's 99% perspiration. Then I'd like to go around the navigator world saying, and don't ever forget, that most of the work in the world gets done by people who are tired or don't feel well. And you think about it, isn't that true? All you got to do is just watch a mother with a baby, and there's somebody who's working all the time who's tired or doesn't feel well. But that isn't enough. You've got to work hard at the right things. And over in Proverbs 24:27, living, develop your business first before building your house. I kind of like the King James better. It says, prepare your work without and make it fit for yourself in the field, and then afterwards build a house. In other words, if you're going to start out farming, don't start by building your house. Start by plowing up the field and get the crops in. You don't make any money off the house, you make it off the crops. Live in a tent or a piano box, but get the crops in. And I have seen time and again, I dare say you have too, somebody's going to go into business, what do? Get a nice office, get everything all set up, they build their house, then they hope to get into the business. It's got to be the other way around. You've got to work hard at the right things. Now, here I have a hard time holding off because my friends know I'm a fanatic on priorities. And trying to figure out what are the basics, what pays off. Because so much of life, you're just spinning your wheels. It's just, you're just stirring up dust. But what gives results? And in anything you do, whether it's my kind of work, whether it's your kind of work, whether it's sports, whether it's music, I know that there are a certain handful of fundamentals that you have to know and practice to be successful. So it's not enough to work hard, because you can work hard at the wrong things. Work hard at the right things. But that's not enough either. Work hard for the right reasons. And that's the very first part of Proverbs. And here, Ken Taylor put Proverbs 1, verses 7, 8, and 9 together in one sentence or two sentences. How does a man become wise? The first step is to trust and reverence the Lord, to fear the Lord. That's the first step. And isn't it true, if we don't start right, you don't end right? And I think about the time that the fellow came to Jesus and said, Jesus, would you tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me? You know, someone has said, where there's a will, there's always a bunch of relatives. And sure enough, it's just there they were. And Jesus said, who made me a divider over you, a judge or divider over you? He declined the role of a judge and took on the role of a teacher. He said, let me tell you a story. There was a man, very successful man, farmer. He had all these grains, the barns full. He decided he had to tear them down and bring bigger, build up bigger barns and so on. And he did that. And then he said, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then who shall these things be which thou hast provided? And then the punchline. So is everyone that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. The wrong reason. Nothing wrong with having the grain, the barns. It was why he had them. It was for himself. And because it was for himself, it was lost. It was gone. Somebody said, you can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead. Right? That's true. So you have to work hard at the right things for the right reasons. Now that leads in to the next word in Deuteronomy 5. 6 days shall you labor and do all your work. Now that word work, I was very interested when I found this out. It means a deputyship, a God-assigned task. It is a partnership with God. I never realized that before. 6 days shall you do all kinds of work, or you should work all kinds, and do all your labor, your partnership with God. Well, then I thought back to Genesis 1, and that's, you know, that's what happened back there, Genesis 1:28. Remember? It says, God created man in his own image, and the image of God, he created him, male and female. Then God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it, have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over every living thing, etc. Later on, he put them in the garden. They were a part. He gave them a creative partnership. Isn't that neat? And I found a little poem. God plants a lovely garden and gives fertile soil, but it is kept and nurtured by man's resourceful toil. You probably heard about the farmer where the preacher came and admired that lovely field of grain and crops and all that was going on and the beautiful farm, and the preacher said something affecting and wonderful, you know what God does, and the man said, well, yeah, God helps him, but you should have seen this farm when he had it all by himself. Well, that's true. It's a partnership. You're like having babies, you know. God did all the miracle, but when it comes, you go to work. And so it is. It's a partnership. And now the fall brought problems. It brought some resistance and conflict, but still, work itself remains good. Now, I just want to make a thought, just one thought here, about making daily work a partnership with God. Just a little practical suggestion. And on this, Psalm 92:2. Now, obviously, every Christian has a quiet time or time with God, some time set aside with God. And one of the things that I find a tremendous help to me in the morning quiet time, there's certain little things I like to do, but one thing above others is to pray through the day forwards. Pray for the first person I'm going to meet, the second one, then first appointment I've got, and try to just pray for each situation that I know that's coming up through the day. And you know, it's amazing what that does. That takes the ordinary things of life and makes them extraordinary. And the thing I've been trying to learn and help others to learn is this, that serving the Lord and having an influence isn't doing this, doing that, and then going out on Thursday noon or going out on Monday night and reaching somebody. It's outflow of what happens to you every day. I think I told some of you about a dramatic thing that happened a few years back. I got a letter here from a mad businessman in town. And it was as hostile a letter as I had gotten for a long time. And he just ripped me from stem to stern for something that I ostensibly had done or not done 5 years before. Well, I was innocent, ignorant of it, and I would have been very simple to simply say, I didn't know anything about it. Well, I prayed about it that morning. And I just felt the Lord prompted me to invite him to lunch. Now, I don't normally look forward to inviting a hostile individual to lunch. But do you? So I did. I called him, and I'll be switched if he didn't accept. So that noon, never forget, we went down here and to the Palmer House, and we put in the order. The waitress walked away, and his lips started to tremble. He said, Lauren, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I wrote you that letter. He said, my heart has been filled with hostility toward everybody. He said, my wife and I aren't getting along. The kids don't want to come home anymore. I've got a fight on, it seems like, with the neighbors. Where I work, everywhere I go, I've got a little war on. He said, I've got to get this straightened out. In fact, he said, I need a parole officer. Well, I didn't exactly know what he meant by that, but I interpreted it as meaning he wanted somebody to help him one-on-one. That was my interpretation. I said, I don't know about that, but I'll be glad to help you. So I began to meet with him. And I won't go into what we did, but you know, his blood pressure came down. The hostilities left. He and his wife started to talk again. The kids began to come home. Blood pressure came down. If I hadn't prayed that morning, I'd have missed it. And Psalm 92:2 says, to declare your loving kindness in the morning, pray through the day forward. Lord, you're loving, you're merciful. May I be an expression of your loving kindness in whatever phone call, letter I write, person I meet. And then at night, it says, in your faithfulness every night, and then to pray through the day backwards every night. And the reason for backwards, because it's easier to think backwards than it is to start in the morning and think forwards. And you can pray for the people that you met and the things that happened. And I'm learning something else. I'm learning something else. You know, I'll make a confession here. Hardly ever, ever, do I speak like this, but when I go home at night and there's something I said I wish I hadn't, or something I didn't say I wish I had, or something didn't come out quite right, never. But you know, then I thought to myself, the tendency is at night to think back through the day on what went wrong and what I didn't get done. So I'm trying to look back over the day and say, yeah, that was good. That was good. Because somebody pointed out to me that God worked the first day and he looked and he thought it was good. Yeah, that wasn't bad. And it puts you on the positive side. And a touch of Philippians 4:8 at night. Whatsoever things are true, honest, just, pure, lovely, good report. If there be any virtue, if there be any praise, that they think on those things. You know what that does? I don't do this. I'm trying to. Help put pleasure. You would then you eat the fruit of your labor, and you should be happy and be well with you. You're not always dwelling on the negatives. God may have done some good things that day. Why not stop and enjoy it? Well, where am I? Yeah, I tell you where I am. We've worked for 6 days, now the seventh day we're going to rest, right? So we need a seventh inning stretch. I'm about that far through my talk, so let's stand up and have a seventh inning stretch. Now, really, this is the seventh inning. It'll be a nine-inning game. So that's about where we are. Remember, the seventh day is the Sabbath. Keep it holy or different. Different. Now, for years, as I said, I've wondered about this. I'm only now beginning to learn. As the old saying goes, you know, so soon old and so late smart. But since you can't start any earlier, well, then, you know, then start now. So, Exodus 34:21 says, 6 days you shall work, but on the seventh day you shall rest. Now, I know there's all kinds of theological problems on this. As far as I am concerned, I don't think it makes too much difference what day of the week that seventh one is. 6 days labor, seventh rest. But now the thing that solves all the arguments for me and all the debates is what Jesus said as recorded in Mark 2, verses 27 and 28. He said, "The Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath." That's the first thing. And they were trying to get man just all encumbered and encased in all these regulations. Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. Now, Jesus is Lord of that day, whenever it is. Whatever suggestions I have to make, and I have a few, but the ultimate counselor is the Lord. You ask him. And I think what he's saying here, all I ask is that you submit to me the decision as to how you spend it. And don't start to get in this problem of all the little details. So, now as I understand it, the seventh day has a couple reasons. I think of three of them. First of all, it's for health. Health. I read in a book by John Stott, I didn't know this, that after the French Revolution, Napoleon went to a 10-day work week. But he had to go back to a 6-day work week because people couldn't stand it physically. And amazingly enough, after the Russian Revolution, they ignored Sunday, and finally, of all people, Stalin himself restored the seventh day as a day of rest. Because of human nature, I say, it's built into our Constitution. It's just the way things are. And godless people have found that out. But you need to rest. It's for health. I remember some years back, I'd gone to see my doctor in town. I didn't know if I had either run out of gas or stripped the gear or something had happened. And so he went through all the tests, and when I came back and got the report, he said, "Lauren, I think what you need to do is about every 2 weeks, you need to take about a couple of days off." I got home, I thought about that for a moment. I thought, no, that averages out about 1 day a week. And it cost me $90 to find that out. And I got a Bible a lot cheaper than that. For health. But also for freedom. For freedom. Not for bondage. Because in Deuteronomy here, as it introduces the Ten Commandments, here's what God says. "I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage." So he didn't bring them out of bondage, only to put them under bondage again. So he gave them some guidelines to free them up. And so God wants, and what does it free you from? One, from being a workaholic. And Mary Nell, I'll have to admit that there are times Lucy thought I was married to the Navigators. Or we'd be sitting there, and at a mealtime, she'd say, "Where are you?" "Well, I'm here, but, you know, where's your mind?" Yeah, that's me. And, but also, it frees you from greed. The thought that you got to work seven, you got to make a little more, a little more, a little more. It breaks that cycle. Also, the worrier. After all, God can supply your need. You got to learn that. And it's interesting that over in that verse I read in Exodus 34, it says, 6 days you shall work, but on the seventh day you shall rest, in plowing time, when you plant the seed, but also in the harvest. Now that took a little restraint. And so it breaks that vicious cycle. But also for perspective. Perspective. I was reading of that great Christian statesman, William Wilberforce, who was a key person in breaking slavery in Britain, who said, "Blessed be God for the day of rest and religious occupation, wherein earthly things assume their true size, and ambition is stunted." That day when earthly things that loom bigger and bigger through that whole week come back to their true size in the light of eternity. True values. We need one day in seven per perspective. Well, now how do you do it? Now, I offer these as little ABCs, and I have to admit, just learning. But the letter of the Sabbath kills, but the spirit of the seventh day gives life. And I want to suggest, and I have to some of you before, but the three R's of the seventh day, whenever that is for you. The first R is in this passage. It says, 6 days you shall labor, and the seventh you shall rest. And I looked that one up too, and that is not a complicated word. It means to cease from your regular work. So if you're a farmer, don't plant, don't harvest. If you're a bookkeeper, don't keep books. If you're a mother, keep on taking care of the baby. Because the Lord said, look, if an ox falls in the ditch on the Sabbath, what are you supposed to do? Get him out. Sure. But you don't have to work with him all day. So, rest. Cease from what you normally do. Now, I've been trying to get up a little earlier on Sunday morning instead of sleeping in. Take out my journal and put at the top, rest. What am I going to rest from today? What am I not going to do today that I normally do during the week? That's amazing how that sort of helps me. I don't mean I don't backslide a little bit, but at least that's what I try. Well, then the next thing he says here, and this is interesting, and remember, that's the second word, remember that you are a slave in the land of Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out from there by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. Why are you supposed to keep it? Because God redeemed you from Egypt, from the land of slavery. Remember that. You've been redeemed with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without spot and without blemish. Think about that. Think of the price he paid. Remember. But it was very interesting to me when I compared this Deuteronomy 5 with Exodus 20, and there they gives a different reason in the fourth commandment for keeping the Sabbath. In the first, there it says, 6 days shall you labor and do all your work, but the seventh is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Incidentally, he rested. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day in hell. Why did he keep it? Well, because, remember that God made the heaven and the earth. And I thought, what great truths to reflect on. God is maker of heaven and earth, the creator. Stand in awe of him. Fear the Lord. Remember his person. Remember what he's done for you. Boy, that really takes those things that seem so big during the week and brings them down to size. Just to think about it. For an illustration here, you take Revelation 4:11. If you just want to start tomorrow morning when you get up, just to turn to Revelation. And it's one reason I wanted to wait till tonight, this Saturday night, tomorrow Sunday. You might want to make that your seventh day, okay? All right, remember creation, Revelation 4:11. Just take it tomorrow morning and read Revelation 4:11. You are worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for you have created all things. And for thy pleasure they are and were created. Remember who he is, creator. And then across the page, Revelation 5:9. Well, that's the bottom of the page here. You are worthy to take the seal and to open it, for thou hast redeemed us to God by thy blood out of every kindred and tongue and people and nation. He's redeemed us. Think about that. With the best that heaven had, his son. And do you realize that if you got bills to pay, you got needs, would God give you what you need? He's already given the best that heaven had. Anything else would be pretty simple alongside that. Remember. Remember. Reflect. And then, sometimes I just like to then think back on the last week and think, what was good? And that amazed me. Because I usually remember what I didn't get done and what went wrong. And I started into what things went right, Philippians 4:8 again, and you know, had a pretty good week after all. Because we tend to look at what we didn't get done and what went wrong, right? So we lose, the joy gets sapped away by looking on the negative side of things all the time. And then refresh, my last R. Exodus 23:12. It says to refresh. Let me get it here. I haven't learned that one. 6 days you should do your work, and the seventh day you shall rest, that your ox and your donkey may rest, and the son of your maidservant and the stranger may be refreshed. I thought, how should you spend the Lord's Day? Well, when was the first Lord's Day? Well, the day Jesus was resurrected. How did he spend that day then? Well, he appeared to Magdalene, Mary Magdalene. He encouraged Peter. He walked out in the country that afternoon with a couple of dispirited disciples, encouraged them. He went to the upper room where these fearful apostles that were behind locked doors and spoke a word of peace to them. He refreshed them. That's how he spent his Lord's Day, the first day. And then I think of Proverbs 11:25. He that watereth shall be watered also himself. You refresh somebody else, and what happens? You get refreshed back again. And by the time you've blessed somebody, encouraged somebody, helped them along life's road, your own problems will come into size, your own spirit's been refreshed, and you feel good about it. So, blessed is the man to whom his work is a pleasure. You shall eat the fruit of your hands. And what should you do about it? I'm at my conclusion, in case you wonder where I am. My last reference. Cheer up. You're going home tomorrow noon. I only got one more chance here, so here we are. Listen to this. 1 Timothy 6:17 and 18. Here's what to do. When you eat the fruit of your hands, the first thing you should do is enjoy it. Command those who are rich in this present age not to be haughty nor to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who gives us richly all things to enjoy. There can be some pleasure, some happiness in it. In other words, the fruit of your labor, eat it, wear it, live in it, ride in it, look at it. And then let them do good, that they may be rich in good works, ready to give, willing to share it. Enjoy it and share it. And what will be the result? Verse 2, Psalm 128, you shall be happy, and it shall be well with you. You will be in a good relationship with God, with others, and with yourself. Let's pause for prayer.